As the kids are exiting, I invite you to turn your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3. We find ourselves in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, starting at verse 16. So if you would open your Bibles, turn there for a moment. All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 3. For those of you who haven't been with us, we have a whole group of people here this morning enjoying a family reunion, and I was just told that you guys are here today, this morning. So nice to see you, all of you, from the Chow clan. This is Christiana and Katharina's mother's side's family reunion. They do it every year, and it moves from place to place, different coasts. This year it's on the West Coast, so we want to welcome them. You haven't been with us. We are walking through the book of Ecclesiastes, okay, sort of section by section. And we find ourselves here in chapter 3 at the end of, or the tail end of, what is probably the most famous section in Ecclesiastes. This poem, we're not going to go over it again, but just want to turn your attention. This poem, starting in chapter 3, everyone knows this poem. And think to yourself, when you've heard this poem, there's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time for good and a time for bad. There's a time for bad and there's a corresponding time for good. When have you heard this? Where do we recite this? Why is this so well known? Where do we hear this? The radio? The radio? It's on the radio?
Turn, turn, turn. The birds. Classic song.
Does anyone know what he's talking about? Wow. Is this an age thing? Maybe? The birds? That's the group? Okay. Oh! You know what? That sounds familiar. Okay. It's in a TV show too, right? Thank you. That's where I know it. Okay. It is an age thing, so we've confirmed that. All right. Where else have we heard it? Not just on the radio. I don't know about you, but I've heard this at funerals. At funerals, they read this. There's a time to laugh and a time to mourn. And so when I've heard it, when I've heard this poem, it's been presented to me as, there's a time for both sides. There's a time for sadness, and there's a time for joy. There's a time for tears, and there's a time for giggles. And right now, folks, it's a time for tears. And I think to myself, oh, yeah, it's really beautiful. I guess it makes sense. But if you've been walking with us through the book of Ecclesiastes, I think we've pretty well established that's not what the author is talking about. This author, this wise sage that we've been referring to as Kohelet, that's the Hebrew word for teacher. Kohelet, for the first two chapters, has been telling us of how meaningless the world is, how unsatisfying the world is. And he says, I searched for satisfaction in wisdom, and I came up empty. I searched for satisfaction in pleasure, and I came up empty. I went both directions. Where else can I turn? The first two chapters, he's just so frustrated. He's so frustrated because he sees his own life, and he sees all of us. He sees all of us with the same pursuits. We're pursuing the same things, and he knows where we are headed. He says, oh, I see that kid. I see that kid. That kid thinks that fulfillment's going to come with pleasure. But I already know that that kid's going to come up empty. I see that young, that older parent. That older parent thinks that satisfaction's going to come with wisdom and knowledge and education. And I know that that person is going to come up empty. Because the world is just like that. The world is especially unsatisfying. And then he comes to chapter 3 with this poem. And I think that this poem, where he shows that there's two sides to this, he starts to actually modify his original statement in the first two chapters. If the first two chapters, the statement is, everything is just unsatisfying, the world is broken, we all know that, you know that, we see it every day. In chapter 3, he actually modifies it. And he says, you know what, let me nuance it a little bit. In actuality, the world is not completely broken. The world is this baffling and perplexing and frustrating mix of both good and bad. It's got some good and it's got some bad. You go on a hike. You go up to the mountains. We're going to be coming up to our summer retreat in a few weeks, in a couple of months. We're going to go up to the mountains, the woods. And you know, in the morning when the sun's just peeking out, it's quite nice. And Kohelet knows that. Kohelet says, it's actually not all bad. Let me nuance it a little bit. The world that I see, Kohelet, he says, the world is a mix, actually. It's a mix of both good and bad. But that's a frustrating thing because God has put eternity into our hearts. And when I hear those words that God has put eternity into our hearts, it's that God has made us one, not this jagged up and down, but we want smooth and we want steady. We want steady, but we can't get steady because the world is not steady. It's anything but steady. And so here we're left. We're left being unsatisfied because we want steady and calm and peace. And all we get is moments of good and then moments of bad. And then moments of good and then moments of bad. And that's what we're at. That's where we're at. So we find ourselves in chapter 3, starting at verse 16. And he's still talking about this situation. The situation, this frustrating situation of both good and bad. Let me read here verses 16 through the end of the chapter. And he's going to give further commentary on the state of the world and why it's so frustrating. Verse 16, and I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I said to myself, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. I also said to myself, as for humans, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Surely the fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Humans have no advantage over animals. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the human spirit rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them? The beginning of this section, he starts off by saying, and I saw something else under the sun. He is continuing. He's giving us another point here. In the previous section, he'd been saying that this world is so frustrating because it's a mix of good and bad, good and bad, good and bad. And it doesn't take a lot of effort to identify what he's talking about. There is a mix of joy and sorrow. There's a mix of healing and mourning. And I don't know about you, I could do less with mourning. I could do less with sorrow. I could do less with tears. There's a time to be born and a time to die. I could do less with death. Being born, bring it on. I like it. It's fun. We have some pregnant women here, right? It's great. Being born is good. Dying is awful. I could do less with one than the other. And he says here in verse 16, he says, I see something else. He says, let me tell you another reason why the world is so frustrating. It's because he says here in poetic form, in the place of judgment, wickedness. In the place of justice, wickedness. In the place of justice, wickedness. You see here at this point, Kohelet laments the fact that in this world of up and down, it would seem that where there should be righteousness, where there should be innocence, where there should be purity, we don't find that. We find corruption. We find injustice. We find bullying. We find situations where the innocent should be protected, but they're not. And it maddens him that this is the case. That the world is full of this unfairness. You've said it to your children. Life is not fair. Do you really believe it? Do you believe in your heart of hearts that life is not fair? You see, I tend to think that we say that when I have two kids, right? And I try very hard to be fair to both. But sometimes it's just impossible to be fair, okay? There's only one more whatever, okay? Right now, it's peaches. Can I have a peach? Oh, that's the last one. Okay. All right, here you go. Can I have a peach too? We're out. But he got one. I know. My bad. I'm sorry. I didn't think to split it. He asked first. But that's not fair. Life's not fair, son. You know? That's just how it is. I'm sorry about that. You see, you say that, but you don't really mean it. You mean it because you got stuck. But you actually think to yourself, yeah, no, life needs to be fair. Life should be fair. The unjust should get their recompense. The unjust should get their comeuppance. The unjust, the wicked, the guilty should be declared guilty. And then the innocent, we should be protected. Right? You see, you say things like life is not fair, but you don't really hope that that's the case. And yet again, it's that maddening frustration. We recognize that the world is not fair, and yet we long for fairness. We long for justice. It bothers us. It actually pains us deeply when we don't see justice. The psalmist in Psalm 73 laments the same thing. Let me read it for you, please. Psalm 73, you can look on the screen here. Psalm 73, but as for me, my feet had almost slipped. I had nearly lost my foothold, for I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked, that the wicked get away with things. They have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They are free from the burdens common to man. They are not plagued by human ills. Therefore, pride is their necklace. They clothe themselves with violence. From their callous hearts comes iniquity. The evil conceits of their minds know no limits. They scoff and speak with malice. In their arrogance, they threaten oppression. Their mouths lay claim to heaven, and their tongues take possession of the earth. Therefore, their people turn to them and drink up waters in abundance. They say arrogantly, how can God know? Does the Most High have knowledge? This is what the wicked are like, always carefree. They increase in wealth. Surely in vain have I kept my heart pure. In vain have I washed my hands in innocence. You know, to me, I feel like the psalmist here in Psalm 73 and Kohelet, and they hung out together. And they traded stories. They traded stories about how they both saw that those who are wicked seem to win. Those who are wicked get away with things. This world is full of these situations where the wicked seem to get away with things, and the innocent and the righteous, it's unfair. They get the short end of the stick. And it's not just in terms of guilt and innocence, but it's also just people who are, how often have you seen people who are completely uninvolved in some sort of accident, and they're the ones that get the worst of it? Yeah, you know, I wasn't even preparing to mention this because it just happened yesterday. Did you see yesterday the family in New Jersey, the family of six? It's a mother and a father and four daughters driving in their minivan. And there was an accident on the other side of the road. This truck, for whatever reason, lost control of his car and went through the center divide and ended up in the wrong lanes. And this minivan, completely innocent, crashed, T-boned the truck. And in this situation, you had probably 10 people involved who were the ones who passed away. The completely uninvolved family. 5 out of the 6 died. Now, I'm not trying to mention that just for tear-jerking purposes, okay? But as I was reading that article and thinking about my sermon today, I thought to myself, I don't have to search far and wide to find instances where life is unfair, where there is, in my opinion, seemingly a lack of justice. And let me tell you something, folks. This is really where it gets, where we turn the screws even a little more. Let's just say, hypothetically, that the initial driver who lost control of his vehicle was impaired. Let's just surmise, okay, that he was impaired. What could they do to him to make things right? Go ask yourself that for a moment. A family of six, 4 daughters, mom and a dad, the only one who survived is the mom. What could they do to this driver to make right what happened? How can you right this? Is that even possible? There's nothing that can be done. There's nothing. No amount of justice in this case will make right, make whole that which is done. No amount of money, no amount of punishment, no amount of remorse, no amount of I'm so sorry that I did this, no amount of any of those things can make right. And so I ask you, where is the fairness in this? Where's the justice? It's not there. So when you say to your child, you know, sorry, buddy, life is not fair, that's actually, it's not something that we want to accept. It's something that we have resigned ourselves to. We don't like it, it's not right, but perhaps it is a true statement. Life's not fair. And we only hope that as we live life, it's fair for us. We see it's not fair for other people. We hope, oh God, please be fair to us. Please be fair to us. Please be right to us. Because we didn't do anything. We're innocent. So we would deserve to be protected. When I was in second grade, my best friend at that time, his name was Aaron Lug. Maybe Aaron will be listening to this recording one day. I don't know where Aaron is in life at all. I have no clue. Aaron was what we would call a runt, a small kid. He was much small. I was not a small child. He was a small child. My best friend, I would ride my bike like miles to go to his house, but really it's like half a mile, all right? Felt like a far, very, 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 very far distance. And one day on the playground, Aaron was being picked on by Mario. Mario was in third grade, we were in second grade, and for whatever reason, Mario was pushing Aaron. Aaron was very pushable. I was a larger child, I was almost the size of Mario, and I saw my friend Aaron getting picked on, and I thought to myself, that is not right. So I stepped in. Oh, this is my moment of heroism. And I pushed Mario. Don't pick on Aaron. Pick on somebody your own size, right? This is straight from the cartoons. And I pushed Mario, and he pushed me back. And I said, no, you're not going to pick on us. Thought to myself, he won't do anything. Mario's a sissy. We know it. He has the reputation in the school of being that way. It's me and Aaron now versus Mario, and Mario pushed me back, and pushed him back, pushed me back. And all of a sudden, Mario cocked his fist, and he hit me right in the jaw. And my tooth came out. I had a loose tooth. It was on the floor. And I started to cry. And I took the tooth, and I went to the office, and they gave me a little thing for it. And I went home. And for years, I thought to myself, I'm going to get Mario back. For years. Where's the justice in that? I was trying to do the right thing. He was picking on Aaron. And I think to myself, I never got back. I never got my revenge. I never was avenged. And Mario, for the rest of our junior high school days, could always look at me and Aaron and say, I got you guys. I got you guys. In trivial ways and in serious ways, this world is full of injustice. And it bothers Qohelet, and it should bother us. Have you been following the Thai soccer team trapped in the cave? They're being rescued this morning. They're coming out one by one. People have already died trying to rescue them. That's not justice, folks. You don't have to look far, but man, I almost feel like sometimes we need to open up our ears to listen, even though we are so sheltered where we live from these things in the world. When we hear about refugees from this country trying to flee to this other country, whether it be here on our soil or in the Middle East or wherever, it doesn't involve us. Really, we are, let's be frank, a lot of us are so isolated and insulated from this. And when I read these things, I know that I can't help. But I know that Qohelet is right. That this is problematic. That this needs to be fixed. That it can't be like this forever. It can't always be up is down, down is up. Right is wrong, wrong is right. It can't always be like this. Where's the mix of both good and bad? He already said to us in the first few verses of this chapter, the world is this maddening mix of good and bad. There's no good and bad here. He says it's just bad. In the place of judgment, wickedness. In the place of justice, wickedness. Colin says, this is the problem with our world. And then he says in verse 17, I said to myself, God will bring judgment, both the righteous and the wicked. For there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. That phrase there, a time for every activity. Turn to verse 1. It's the same wording as in verse 1, there is a time for every activity. I think what Qohelet is doing is he's bringing us back to this, there's good and there's bad, there's good and there's bad. The only problem is in this case, the only difference is the good is not yet. Everything else, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to mourn and a time to laugh, a time to build and a time to tear. All of those two sides of a coin, they all happen now. We experience them all the time. Qohelet says, not when it comes to justice and righteousness. There is going to be both good and bad, but the good is not going to come until God does it. God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked. For there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. Both of those phrases point to a future time. A future time that should be on our hearts for us as we long to see things made right. You see, there are... The world, I find, is especially complex and complicated. So complicated, in fact, that there are times we'll be talking, me, Cindy and I will be talking in the car about something, and we realize there's no answer. There's no answer to, where's the answer to hunger in the world? Okay? We have people who are starving in the world. It's not us. We're isolated. We know that. We're isolated. We're protected. We have systems in place. There are countries of the world where people are starving. So what does the world do? The world sends aid, foreign aid to these countries. Food, grain, even people to teach the locals how to farm, how to cultivate. Why aren't they getting fed? Why aren't they receiving the aid? Well, then you have another complication. You have the issues of government control, perhaps, where the government actually controls the supplies, and then because of corruption or whatever the case may be, they're not actually distributing it. So then I ask you, what's the fix for that? Do we then just go and force this situation? Do we strong arm the government? Do we remove the government for our purposes so that the people can get the food? And I think to myself, what is the answer? I don't know. But I'd like to think that there are smarter people than me who are thinking about these things and trying to fix these things, whether it be from a small perspective or from a national perspective. And I think to myself, have we fixed that problem yet? Have we fixed the problem of hunger in the world? I don't think so. I think it's still there. I think people are still starving. Do we have enough food to feed them? Yeah, we do. But for whatever reason, the problems that exist are so complex, they cannot be fixed by people. And so I await. I await the King to come to fix these problems. I know it is such a cliche and hokey answer sometimes. Who's going to fix these problems? My Savior is. The King is. Because when He comes, He's going to bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked. There are times I want to ask you, how often do you long for the second coming? How often do you? It's not just to bless us. It's to make right that which is wrong in the world. And there is no end to the things that are wrong in the world. And these things that are wrong cannot be fixed by us. We've tried and we will continue to try. I have no problem with the effort. But we have to also admit there's too much incentive for people to do wrong. Psalm 73 tells us, those who do wrong get away with it. And for these people, if their motivation is this life, then they're going to continue to do wrong. So let's get rid of them. Let's remove them. Let's make right where there is wrong. Can't do it. And so we once again turn our attention, turn our eyes to that future hope that even Kohelet here, I think, alludes to. When Kohelet says, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked. And there's going to come a time for every activity. We keep going here. He pivots somewhat and compares us with animals for a moment. He says, I also said to myself, as for humans, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Surely the fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. One dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Humans have no advantage over animals. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the human spirit rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? What is he talking about? He says here that from my point of view, humans and animals are very, very similar. They live and then they die. And when they die, they go back to the dust. They're the same. And so it makes him even more frustrated, and it makes him more irritated, and it makes him more unsatisfied. In the animal kingdom, is there right and wrong? What is the right and wrong? Maybe I should ask that way. What's the right and wrong? How do we see right and wrong in the animal kingdom? In the animal kingdom, there is no right and wrong. In the animal kingdom, animals rule by power and by strength. Nature Channel, Planet Earth, when the cheetah is about to go and hunt and there is a pack of goats or something, it's the slow ones, the chubbier ones, the sickly ones, the one who broke his leg, they're the ones that get eaten. The cheetah doesn't say, last week I ate the sickly one, but to be fair, I'm going to eat the fast one. I'm going to eat the agile one. Yeah, I'm going to challenge myself. It's just got to be fair, right? No, there's no fairness. There is no right and wrong. It is completely the law of the jungle. And I ask you, how are humans any different? We'd like to think that we're different, but in so many ways, we are just the same. It's the law of strength. It's the law of the jungle. It's the law of pushing and shoving. It's the law of being rude and unkind. It's the law. Yeah, yesterday in the evening, we took the boys to Discovery Kingdom. It was 90 degrees, and Cindy said, let's go to Discovery Kingdom. Let's go to Six Flags. No. Okay, fine. And we were there, and we're in line, and, again, we try to teach our boys to wait in line. It's important to wait in line, to be respectful, and some little kid, unknowingly, it wasn't on purpose, went in front of Jacob. Papa! He cutted in front of me. I thought, how do you know the word cutted? You're 3 years old. You know the concept of cutting? So I said, what does it mean to cut? It means he's in my place. Oh. That's good. That's right. What do we do? So then I turned to the boy who cut it. I said, excuse me. You just cut it in front of my son. You need to get back here, son. No, come on. Let him go. What did I just teach my kid? What did I just teach him? Law of the jungle. Be nice. Be respectful. Someone cuts in front of you, let them. But don't cut in front of other people. Is that what I just taught them? Is that a good lesson? Should I have found that kid's parents? They were bigger than me. Law of the jungle. If they were smaller than me, if they were Chinese, I might say something. Hey, brother. Oh. You turn to look for a moment. Oh, that's a big guy. Law of the jungle. Go ahead. Go ahead, son. We are just like the animals. We think that we have a moral compass, and sometimes we do. But more often than not, we rule by the same laws. We operate by the same rules. It's the law of strength. It's not the law of right and wrong. It's the law of power. And ultimately, as Kohelet says, we are just like the animals. We will all come to die. Where then is the justice? I think he's alluding to the fact that the justice is not in this life. It's in the life to come. I think he says that in this life, on this side of the resurrection, I think he's talking about something that he doesn't even understand fully yet. But on this side of the resurrection, on this side of the second coming,
The rules don't quite work the way we want them to work. We'd like it to be the guilty are punished, the innocent are protected, nothing ever unfair happens in life. Unfortunately, on this side of the second coming, it's not like that. On this side of the second coming, we are really like animals in certain ways that rule by strength and by strong-arming and by being rude and by being unfair. Sorry to say, folks, on this side of the second coming, it is like that. On the other side of the second coming, then, is the flip side, is the alternate, is where right is right and wrong is wrong, is where the innocents are protected and where the guilty are judged. And it reminds us to long for that. In the meantime, what do we do? So I saw, in verse 22, so I saw that there is nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them? So I saw that what is good for now is for people to enjoy their work. He said similar words already. We look at, in the first section, starting at verse 9, what do workers gain from their, this is chapter 3, verse 9, what do workers gain from their toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He's made everything beautiful. He has set eternity. Verse 12, I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live. I think this is, he's really saying the same thing, folks. I know the words are different, but it's the same sentiment. The sentiment is, number one, I think we need to reshape the way we see the world. Kohelet here is trying to shape our worldview, is what we would call it. Shape the way that we recognize the way the world operates. He's trying to shape it. And as he shapes it, as the Lord shapes our minds about the world, when we recognize the world isn't a fair place, when we recognize that we are trying to do right, we who are trying to live according to our faith, are trying to live rightly, we are not going to be always protected. There will come a time where we are not protected, and we have to recognize that. So Kohelet is trying to shape our thinking, and he's also trying to say, in the meantime, find satisfaction in the simple, quiet, peaceful moments that we have. He said that earlier in verse 12, and he says it again in verse 22. Nothing better than for a person to enjoy their work. It is a gift of God to enjoy your work. It's not your occupation. It just means to enjoy sort of the daily routine that we endure in our lives. Without having our minds always striving for something more or better. Because he has already told us that more does not satisfy. And better, there's no such thing. Can we actually find contentment in where we are right now? My last thought for you, Paul says in Philippians chapter 4, verse 13, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And if you read that chapter, you read that section, the context, it's not about lifting super, super heavy rocks or something. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. I'm He-Man. No. Paul says, I have learned the secret in that chapter. He says, I've learned the secret of being content with a lot and also with very little. Have we learned that yet? Have we learned how to be content? Because I think that Kohelet really is telling us, this is the way the world is. We need to accept it and find contentment in what we have. Man, I'm telling you right now, folks, I'm trying to find contentment. Not because I'm discontent, but because I want to listen. Let's find contentment together as we listen to Kohelet. As we have the world, our worldview shaped by him, by the Lord. May the Lord bring us contentment. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, we come before you this morning. And we recognize that the world as it is right now,